Is Kristi Noem's job in jeopardy after criticism over the Minneapolis protests? Doesn't appear so. Is there really a cockroach problem at the food court at West Acres Mall? After a thorough inspection, doesn't appear so. And now that the North Dakota legislature has shot down free meals for all kids in public school, is the issue really dead? Doesn't appear so. Good morning, my friend. Great to be with you here on the Steve Hallstrom Show on a beautiful sunny morning here in Fargo, North Dakota. I don't know where it's like where you are at. Yeah, it's cold. I guess we have that. Wasn't all that bad yesterday, but going to be back into the freeze again today. Still 1 degree below zero last time I checked. But it looks so darn nice out there. And although there is a little bit of a breeze, not too windy today. So I've said I can take just about whatever temperature you want to throw my way. As long as you give me sunshine and light winds, we'll make it. And here we are, friend, at the 27th of January. We're getting there. We have almost made it through the death march that is January in our part of the world. Whether you're listening on the Flag East, Flag West, today, KTGO out in Tioga, Stanley, Watford City, Williston, Minot. Whether you're listening on a smart speaker, mobile app, whatever, glad to have you with me today. I'm going to retool the show a little bit today. Can't get in too many ruts, right? That's what they say, especially as we get older in life. You got to change things up. Sometimes just to change it up. I changed it up for a good reason today. My good friend Greg Steeman is going to join me. North Dakota State Representative, a Republican from Fargo. He was one of the co-sponsors of the bill to get the universal free breakfast and lunch through the legislature in the special session. It did not go. But neither of us really got what we wanted on this deal. And so we're going to talk about this today. Greg is going to be in for the full hour. And I want to ask a lot of questions. I want to hear his perspective. He and I had a long talk over the weekend, and he made a lot of really good points about where he stands on this one. And I made a lot of points about where I stand on this that I made to you if you listened on the show. And the great thing about Greg and I is we can have significant disagreements, and yet we just shake hands at the end of the day, probably give each other a bro hug and say, I love you, brother. Thanks for doing this. And so we're going to do that today. We're going to kind of take you inside the ropes on how a couple of guys who believe in the same things can work through an issue where we are on different sides of it and still at the end of the day shake hands and say we're still friends, because we don't have nearly enough of that in our world today. So we'll do that in the 10 o'clock hour. So we're going to hop right to it here because we had so dang much to do in this first hour. The news cycle is absolutely flying today. And we've just got a limited amount of time, so let's do it here as we're coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio. You can call us 271-1100 today, and we'll have plenty of time for phone calls in the second hour of the show today. We don't always do that because there's so much to tell you about, but we will today. 271-1100, that's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. You can also email us, studio@flagfamily.com, and you can text us at 701-237-1590. All right, let's rock and roll here with the Morning Wire, and it's the daily rundown. I say semi-automatic storylines, trying to hit a lot of bases as quickly as we can here for you to get your day started. What's going on in the world today? The Almanac today tells us that on January 27th in Fargo, average high is 18, average low is 1, record high 41 back in 1892, and record low minus 31, that was back in 1894. So, wow, that's a long time ago. And I don't know how the thermometers were back there. Oh, no, that's 2004. I'm sorry, the record high was in 1892. The record low, minus 31 in 2004. After all those emissions that were released into the world from 1892 to 2004, somehow we got colder. Interesting how that happens there for you. Speaking of weather today, Dino says our high temp today will be somewhere around 8. And we're sitting right at, we're at minus 3 right now. So there you go on that. Sunrise this morning in Fargo was 7:57. Sunset 5:22. We will gain 2 minutes and 34 seconds of daylight today. It's really noticeable now, and I love it. In the markets today, Dow is down big today, 473. Traders taking profits after a big run. Doesn't seem to be any major news event here. S&P 500 up 24, though, and the NASDAQ up 200 points today. WTI crude oil today up about 70 cents at 61.24. Gold down $28 an ounce at $5,054. Silver down about 8% today, $8.78 at $106.72. Bitcoin today, about where it's been, $88,051. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas nationwide is $2.88. North Dakota, $2.53. South Dakota, $2.60. Minnesota, $2.66. And diesel at $3.59 today. In the news today, Border Patrol Commander Greg Bovino is expected to leave Minneapolis today as Tom Homan arrived last night to start overseeing the ICE operations in the area. Kristi Noem, also her role will be reduced in some way. Only the administration really knows exactly the nuances there. But it does appear as though there is a new sheriff in town when it comes to the ICE efforts in Minneapolis as Tom Homan now hits the scene. Yesterday, there was what is being reported to be a possible thaw in the chilly relationship between Donald Trump and Tim Walz as they had a phone call yesterday after the second fatal shooting that happened over the weekend. The president and Walz both went to social media saying that it was a professional conversation, I guess I could use that term. In Trump's words, quote, Governor Walz called me with a request to work together in Minnesota. It was a very good call, and we actually seem to be on a similar wavelength. He was happy to hear that Tom Homan was going to Minnesota. So am I. We have had tremendous success, and then he lists all the other places that they've had good results down there. He finished with a statement, crime is way down, but both Governor Walz and I want to make it better, with an exclamation point. So we will see what happens there. I will note that the social media post put out by Tim Walz and Jacob Fry last night seemed to indicate that they kind of backed Trump into a corner and they told him what was going on and they told him a thing or two. So just so you know kind of how that went there. I also put in the rundown today a comment from Kevin Cramer about what happened over the weekend with the second shooting I talked about. Homeland Security, led by Kristi Noem, put out a statement saying this looks like a situation where an individual wanted to do maximum damage and massacre law enforcement. But on Monday, Kevin Cramer, U.S. Senator from North Dakota, told the forum's editorial board that Kristi Noem's comments were careless. Quote, to call someone a domestic terrorist when they were carrying out their First Amendment and Second Amendment rights that we so strongly protect, the whole thing demonstrates just how upside down everybody becomes when their side of something is challenged. He said both sides had been using words and phrases that were inappropriate and had led to the increased tensions in Minnesota. That's fairly frontal by Kevin Cramer there on a couple different levels. I decided I'd share that with you here today. In Moorhead last night, the school board renewed its school resource officer program on a 6-1 vote, tried to figure out who the one dissenting vote was on that, and I can't. I don't know how you would say that's not a good thing. But they've now extended that program for 3 more years. Chris Helmick, the chief, said this should be the easiest sales pitch in history, I guess, before giving his presentation. Also in the news, Crow Wing County deputies assisted federal agents yesterday in some downtown Brainerd arrests. They took 4 people into custody there, and they were working on national security issues with ICE presence in the area. So again, more kind of regional spread outs on the ICE troops, not just in Minneapolis. The attorneys, the defense attorneys for Faith Dixon withdrew their participation in the case just a day before the trial was slated to begin in Burley County. The defense attorneys, Dane DeCray and Bruce Ringstrom, filed a motion to withdraw as counsel. So they're going to push the trial back to April. So they didn't want to defend Faith Dixon anymore. I don't know exactly what to make of that. Cockroaches, reports WDAY Radio, were found in a wall cavity at Leon Chin in the West Acres food court during some construction going on there. There's been some remodeling going on there over the last few weeks. And the insects were found during demolition of a non-shared interior wall. After an extensive inspection, they believe that the problem was isolated, did not spread any other areas, and said cockroaches did not get out and sample any of the food in the food court at that time. So there you go on that story right there. And those are some of the stories that are making headlines here on this Tuesday afternoon. When we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show, story of the day, cancel culture is still alive and well in Minneapolis, where the beloved Minnesota Vikings play-by-play announcer is suddenly an enemy of the left. All for stating facts. We'll talk about it when we come back. Steve Hallstrom Show. Need a new garage door or fast, reliable repairs to the door you already have? OnTrack Garage Door has you covered. They specialize in commercial, residential, and farm shop doors, plus expert spring replacements and door repairs. OnTrack Garage Door is proud to be veteran-friendly and grounded in strong Christian values. Quality work, honest service, and a team you can trust. Let them get you on the right track with OnTrack. Call them at 701-793-4246 today. 793-4246, 793-4246. Story of the day is cancel culture is alive and well in the Twin Cities. When Donald Trump got elected to his second term back in November, I started to notice that all of a sudden it seemed okay to say things that we were thinking all along, but you could never really say them. Things about trans and climate change and domestic terrorism and the border and all that. It seemed like conservatives who were a little nervous to speak maybe even truth sometimes, certainly their honest opinions, all of a sudden felt, you know what, it's okay. And you didn't get all of the pitchforks and the fire shots that you got back during the Biden administration. However, I was reminded yesterday that if you say the wrong thing about the wrong issue in the wrong place, cancel culture is still very much alive and well. Paul Allen is the play-by-play voice for the Minnesota Vikings, and I would say that he's a beloved character among Minnesota sports fans. He lives and dies with the team. It sounds like he's going through the same pain that we are as Vikings fans, and he does a very popular radio talk show on KFAN, the Twin Cities sports station, kind of the main sports station down there. Well, Paul Allen is a believer, and I've never really known where he stands on political issues, and he's been pretty disciplined on that. And when you're in Minneapolis, you probably are not best advised to say a whole lot about politics when you're doing your sports show, because sports fans are left, right, and everywhere in between, and we certainly know that. But every once in a while, I've heard him say something that makes me go, huh, and it's always really, really, really subtle. And it's always really, really, really quick. Well, that changed last week on Friday. They were going through a typical morning of just kind of idle talk. Vikings are out of the playoffs now, so you got to fill your time with something. They were talking about all kinds of interesting little things, and then the comment that set off a firestorm.
Layer.
What about cayenne pepper?
Yeah, I heard that's the thing now. I didn't know the cayenne pepper bit. Put in your sock?
Did you not see that?
Yeah, no. The cayenne pepper in your sock.
The potential of trees exploding.
Is that real? Can we talk about that one second?
If in conditions like this, do paid protesters get hazard pay? Those are the things that I've been thinking about this morning.
Yeah, probably not going to touch that one.
Okay, so that was Paul Allen, then Chad Greenway saying, I'm not going to touch that one. Paul Allen said, do the paid protesters get hazard pay on a day like this? This was the day when they were having the big march downtown, and it was darn cold. And Paul Allen said what he said. You heard him. And I thought at the time when I heard this, the first time I heard this was something like, wow, can you believe he said that? I'm like, oh, boy, I bet he's gonna hear it from a lot of people on this. And, oh, boy, has he. The Twin Cities sports media landscape has turned on him, and just about everybody down in the Twin Cities. I did not realize that all the sports reporters and the sports personalities were far left, can't say that kind of people, and to turn their back on Paul Allen, but many of them are. Not going to say all, but many of them are. And this has led to a story being run in the St. Paul Pioneer Press just about every day. The first one was Paul Allen said that. Can you? And they're not reporting just to report. You can just tell they love this, and they're going to make an example of Paul Allen. And different voices have weighed in on this, and some people saying, you know, I know Paul; he's a pretty good guy, but this was a horrible mistake that he made. A horrible mistake. Can't believe that he would have said anything like this. Well, let me counter that narrative for just a moment. There seems to be now in the Twin Cities media an unwillingness to admit that there are paid protesters at rallies. Like, oh, no, we are all there for virtue. This is no establishment, even though it's a common fact that there is a business called Rent-A-Mob. I don't know if that's exactly the right name, but a guy's been on cable news talking about, yeah, people call me. I try to get a bunch of people together to go protest. So it's and we know with the DAPL protest, there was a lot, there was a significant number of people there. Law enforcement was telling us stories. We got paid more depending on what we did. If we got arrested, we got paid even more. So we all wanted to get arrested. So I did a little searching last night, just, okay, what do we know here? And I came up with a couple of things. First of all, an AI search on using Grok, which is Twitter's kind of built-in AI tool, gave me this nugget. Groups such as Navigate Minnesota or the Northside Achievement Zone frequently post job openings for community organizers on job boards with salary ranges often $45,000 to $65,000. These roles specifically require the employee to, quote, coordinate rallies, lead demonstrations, and mobilize voter turnout, end quote. This is Grok, hardly a bastion of right-wing conservative thought. Now, Paul Allen never said all protesters, did he? Never said that. Didn't say every protester was getting paid, and you're hearing some of that. Oh, not all these. He's saying that all the no, he never said all. He just said the paid protesters, are they getting hazard pay? So I put a note out on Twitter last night with a little bit of this research that I've done, and I've said, can we please stop this manufactured outrage, this over-offended temper tantrum about Paul Allen and what he said, and he should be fired. I'm never listening to that stage again. Paul Allen should be fired. And I said, my closing comment, I thought we had gotten rid of cancel culture. I thought we had gotten to a point where we're like, oh, yeah, all this stuff we said about COVID, yeah, we kind of canceled a lot of people. They turned out to be right. Huh. And my second piece of evidence I will put before the court is this. This was Laura Ingraham last week in Minneapolis.
To the human race.
Why are you wearing a mask? Why are you wearing a mask?
Because my nose is cold. Oh. Why do you care if I'm wearing a mask?
I'm just curious. Just a question.
Agitated.
This is the crowd. And they apparently are policing their borders. So they're policing their borders here, which is fascinating.
Shame. Shame.
Oh, really? So boring.
Shame. Shame.
Do you have a job? Do you have a job?
Shame. Shame. I'm getting paid right now.
Did you hear that? I think a lot of you have heard this already. I'm getting paid. Right?
Do you have a job?
Shame. Shame. I'm getting paid right now.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I never like to draw full conclusions off one quick statement by an emotionally, obviously deranged young woman. Sad for her, by the way, that she's in the state that she's in. Maybe she meant, like, I'm working today, but this is my lunch break. I'm trying to be fair here, but I'm not having much success. So, look, let's stop this. Oh, the protesters aren't getting paid. Nobody said all of them were, but if you don't think some of them are, then you're being foolish. And I don't think enough people in the Twin Cities understand that. Had they been up here for DAPL, we know it like the back of our hand because it was evidence, it was fact, everybody said it. And honestly, a lot of those people weren't part of the DAPL, didn't care, didn't know, it didn't matter to them. But if they knew the culture behind protest movements right now, this thing happens. This is an industry. We know there's money behind it. That story of the day, I thought cancel culture was dead, and it's not. Paul Allen apparently is going to take a couple weeks off because of this, and I'm like, Paul, don't. And he apologized yesterday on a show. Paul, don't. More on the show coming up after this. All right, because we are moving some things around in the show today, we have moved Best Thing I Heard All Day from the 10 o'clock hour here to this segment. So I have to give credit to my lovely bride for saying, wow, there was a really good exchange on the 5 yesterday. Well, at the time we were talking about it, it wasn't yesterday, it was today. And she said, you should take a listen to this. And so I did. I'm like, wow. That was really, really good. And I'm going to play that for you here in a second because it was the best thing I heard all day. Before that, though, I want to tell you that Dr. Matt Eaton at Dakota Implant and Sedation Center has extensive advanced training in implant dentistry. Getting a full new smile in one day takes more than skill. It takes passion, training, and the right technology. Dr. Matt uses advanced 3D imaging, digital planning, and in-house technology, and each smile is carefully planned before the treatment even begins. Many patients are able to walk out the same day with a strong, natural-looking, full smile. A compassionate team, a comfortable experience, financing options as well. DakotaDentalImplant.com. DakotaImplant.com. DakotaImplant.com is the website that you want to go there for. Smile like you mean it with Dr. Matt. All right. Jonathan Joey Jones is his name. And I have become a fan of this guy over the years. He's a disabled combat vet and gun expert as well. And he took a swing yesterday at what I basically gave you yesterday morning. This whole fake victim stuff. And how do we objectively look at emotional situations and just use our common sense to try to give some idea of what happened and how it could have been prevented? I thought this is about 3.5 minutes, and I thought it was really, really well done. So this is Johnny Joey Jones giving his take on what happened in Minneapolis over the weekend. And this was on The Five yesterday on Fox News Channel.
There's a couple of things. Number one, the Second Amendment is a right. I'm not a Second Amendment absolutist. You have the right to carry a weapon to defend yourself, not the privilege. It is a right. Those rights come with restrictions. I think you would understand that more than anyone at this table. One of those restrictions is you have to have your ID and your permit on you. We don't know. Current reports are he didn't have either one of those on, at which point he's not carrying legally. Mm-hmm. But number two, even beyond that, with the right to carry a firearm comes the responsibility to do it correctly and to do it with foresight and to do it understanding the situation you're walking into and what could happen once you get there. Just about every state offers a class on that. And if you carry your firearm, you should take that class. And if your state charges you for it, you should go protest for that class to be taxpayer funded because it is a right. Mm-hmm. So that's important. We can talk about policy all day long. There's only one person in this world that could have absolutely prevented Alex Priddy from getting shot that day, and it's Alex Priddy. Doesn't mean I think he should have been shot. I don't think it was necessary whatsoever to shoot Alex Priddy to save a life. But I get to watch that incident from behind Alex Priddy, not as one of the arresting officers and not as potentially the person that I believe from looking at the video did shoot him. Why does he have 10 rounds in him? Because if you have to shoot anybody once, you better shoot them enough to kill them, because if you're shooting somebody, you think they're trying to kill you. Every police officer in this country is taught that. If you want to change that, go lobby to have it changed. Why was he shot? He was shot because of the reasonableness clause, the reasonableness doctrine. The Supreme Court decided this, which is the fact that if you are a police officer conducting police work and someone has, and it's explicitly outlined, someone has resisted arrest, violently or not, disobeyed orders, and shown the means to harm you, then you have the ability to protect yourself. Now, do I think he should have been shot? No, because I see 10 things that happened before that happened that could have been handled differently. But what I don't see are the 10 minutes before that happened. You call him a protester, I call him an agitator. He showed up with a cell phone. He showed up in the middle of the street, in the middle of an operation. That's common sense. I don't care what your passions are. To carry a weapon on your person and to get in the middle of a police operation, whether you believe it or not, that is lawful, 100%. Another way it could have been prevented is if there was a police cordon from Minneapolis Police Department stopping people from, like Alex Priddy, from getting in the middle of the operation rather than holding a sign and speaking loudly and proudly from 100 feet away. That is the end of the story. There might even be a federal agent that goes to jail because some jury or a federal investigation decides he acted prematurely or shot him and shouldn't have. That I'm not arguing or disputing that because I haven't seen the investigation. But I know for a fact Alex Priddy had no business where he was in that moment. I know for a fact that he did resist arrest. And if you are carrying lawfully, the moment you resist arrest, you are now carrying unlawfully to the point that in the state of Minnesota, your carry permit is revoked in that moment. So the point here is nobody's condemned in this other than the politicians that let it happen. Yep. And if for you, that's Donald Trump. And if for you, that's Tim Walz. As an American citizen, I'm glad both of them talked today. This doesn't ever need to happen again. Border Patrol agents need to get to the border and do their job. Minneapolis Police Department, all 600 of them, if they need to be there to help ICE surgically extract people like what's his name, Jose Huerta Chuma, who is what violent rap sheet that includes domestic assault involving intentional bodily harm. I don't care who you are in this country, but if you're willing to risk your life for that person, whatever happens to you, my sympathy goes down quite a bit. I don't want anybody to get hurt. I love people. I even love bad people. But for God's sake, have some common sense. That's your responsibility, especially if you're carrying a weapon. And that was not exercised, and I can't help that.
Mm-hmm. Really good stuff there. And reasonable people, I think, on our side can disagree on what should he have been shot. Was it right that he got shot? Obviously, Johnny has looked at what he's looked at and has said, I have made the decision that he should not have been shot. But he also said, but I'm looking at video. I don't know what happened in the 10 minutes before all this happened, but at the time that we pick up the story on all the video that's there, he's in the middle of a bunch of ICE agents, and he makes that point very, very clear, and he should not have been there. And the whole thing about Second Amendment, this is not a Second Amendment story. And I know that Senator Kramer brought Second Amendment into it in his comments to the forum. I'll respect the senator's right to bring whatever he wants to. Obviously, someone knowledgeable probably has inside info that we don't have. But to me, this is not a Second Amendment story, because if you are someone who has a gun, your Second Amendment allows you to have it, but it doesn't allow you to have it in the middle of an altercation with law enforcement. I've seen the memes, the jokes, the one-liners. I went to concealed carry class, and it was 7 hours of don't do what that guy did. And I don't want to laugh at any of this, because there's nothing to laugh about when you've got someone dead and you likely are going to have a law enforcement officer who has to go through some kind of a justice proceeding about that. I will say again what I said, have said on this from the beginning. You don't know. Johnny doesn't know. Kevin Kramer doesn't know. And I don't know what else happened there. We don't know what was said. We don't know the activity. We don't know the history leading up to all of it. We just don't know. And what we see happening on the left, which is the problem that really needs to be addressed here, is today's radical playbook. And today's radical playbook includes trying to convince the American public that a protester can not just stand on the sidewalk with a sign and yell and scream, spit, throw snowballs even. Apparently, you can throw bottles of urine at officers, too, and all that apparently is fine. We've decided that's all fine, so whatever. But we've decided that you can insert yourself into a mix of law enforcement and somebody who's part of that, walking down the street or interacting with law enforcement. You can get in the middle of all that and start fighting against them and having a gun with you, pulling it out, saying whatever you said, showing the gun. We don't know what all happened in the scrum. We don't. And then the radical playbook says the law enforcement officer must be able to know with precision everything about you, your background, your intentions, and if you had a gun, took it out, pointed at them, whatever you did, the law enforcement officer must be able to predict with certainty what you will do and if you really meant to pull out the gun and shoot them, or if you're just making a scene. You need to be omniscient as a law enforcement officer there. And there is no benefit of the doubt. There is no room to allow that person to say, you know what? We don't know. That guy thought he was in danger. Therefore, there's none of that in the radical playbook here today. Now, obviously, to you and me, all that's ridiculous. And deep down, they know it as well. Had Alex Pretty stayed on the sidewalk with his sign and his snowballs, he would be alive today. If Renee Good would have just been at basketball practice or the library or on the street instead of in her car in the middle of all this, none of these things would have happened. This country became great because there was something called personal responsibility that the pilgrims and the settlers and the founders of the country and the people that built this thing from the ground up, they said, you know what, if you do stupid things, you're going to get stupid results. And we have forgotten that. And we have in the liberal playbook, we have decided that that doesn't matter anymore. The radicals say it doesn't matter any of that. What matters is that a law enforcement officer did something that they shouldn't have done in their opinion. And we, by the way, know everything about everything here. All of this that they do in the radical playbook is meant to convince you that ICE shouldn't be here, and it's working. You see more and more of that here. I do believe that more people will die before this is done, because I don't think Trump is going to pull everybody out, and the protesters and the agitators are not going away. You cannot back down, and I would encourage the president to think about this. You cannot back down on this deal, or they will believe that they beat you, and you will give fuel to their next fire and the next one and the next one and the next one. It's going to require a tricky hand to de-escalate the situation, try to bring this to an end. But to the president, I beg you, do not leave Minnesota until your job is done. Do not let those who are putting their finger up in the wind right now saying, people don't like it, we're not going to get invited to the party anymore. You have a job to do. And we either have law and order or we don't. There are not degrees or levels to this. We either have law and order or we don't. So when it comes to law and order of any kind, you either allow them to do their job or you don't. All right, 943, Craig wants to get in on the conversation here today. He joins us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hey, Craig.
Steve, I urge everybody who can hear this, go to the Moorhead City Commission on YouTube last night. We had a mayor that was talking about how the city staff is working overtime to see what they can do to fight against the feds. We have Lisa Borgen, who said that they have a mob mentality, and she's for law enforcement that is trained, but not the ones with 42 hours of training. She says Alex was attacked by six thugs who shot him 9 times. She calls border agents. They said they need to go home. There's been 3 homicides in Minneapolis, and 2 are by ICE. We had a reading by Emily Moore saying that from a nursing student praising Alex.
Yeah, we got you.
On
Craig,
and
I get
on
you.
On and on and on.
Thanks very much. Good stuff. Let's all check it out. Wish we had more time, but we don't. Thank you, Craig, for giving a call in there. Yeah, remember, because some of these people want to be voted in for a higher office. Remember that, too. Steve Alstrom Show back after this. Vision Ford Lincoln in Wappan, is hiring in their sales team. That could mean the job of a lifetime for you. You make a lot of good money just helping people find the car, truck, or SUV they've been looking for, whether it's new or pre-owned. And the service techs at Vision Ford Lincoln make more than anywhere else in the 5-state area. No weekends, full benefits. Vision Ford Lincoln, not just a place to buy a great set of wheels, it's a place to put your service career in overdrive. Go to drivewithvision.com to find out more. That's drivewithvision.com. All right, it's time for the Key 3 here on the Steve Alstrom Show. And usually we do this in the 10 o'clock hour, but as I mentioned, my friend Greg Steeman, state representative, is going to stop by. We're going to have a little friendly debate today on the merits of the legislation that went through the House and the Senate and eventually got shot down in the Senate for universal school lunch. And Greg's got an interesting perspective on this that I think you need to hear. And I needed to hear it as well. I didn't change my mind on how I stood on it, but it was really good to have a more informed opinion on the whole situation. He's got some really good points. We'll do that in the 10 o'clock hour, which means that the Key 3 gets moved to the 9 o'clock hour today. So here are what I believe to be the 3 most consequential, I'm using air quotes today, and you'll understand in a minute, the 3 most consequential stories in the news cycle today. Story number 1. The Federal Reserve, according to a new survey of the CNBC governors, is likely to lower interest rates only 2 more times in 2026, even under the president's new chair pick, which he'll make sometime between now and May, because the new guy or gal will go into leadership position in May. I have said to you all along that I think this should be a very good year for business, because business really hinges on interest rates. And if interest rates are low, you get businesses that want to expand. They might do some financing to grow. And that is something that weaves its way through the entire economy. And I said, we're going to get a new Fed chair, and Trump's not going to pick somebody who wants interest rates to stay where they're at. He's going to want someone who's going to fight to push them low, and probably even very low. So this whole storyline has been one percolating, and this survey may be taking a little wind out of my sails on my assertion here. But CNBC reports that the Fed board governors that they surveyed, they see just 2 more quarter point cuts this year, with no reductions expected in 2027. Now, we've come down a full point, so there's that. So another half would certainly be good, but I think a lot of us were thinking we might get another full point, maybe even a point and a half, to really get the business of the country rolling again. But they don't see that. It looks like, and this is funny to watch CNBC put this out there, improving GDP and labor market expectations are behind the firmer rate outlook, as well as tame inflation concerns. Wow, with the Trump tariffs, it was supposed to be Katie bar the door. We're going to have no GDP. Everybody's going to be out of a job. Inflation's going to go through the roof. And it doesn't look like the Fed board people are seeing it that way. So overall, generally still healthy and good, but maybe not the all-out war on interest rates that we thought. But it's still early. We'll see what happens. But I thought that was notable. Story number two, I will title this story, See What Happens When Government Gets Out of the Way of Businesses? General Motors, according to CNBC, topped earnings expectations in its conference call this morning and is announcing a dividend increase and stock buyback program. GM beat Wall Street's fourth quarter earnings expectations and guided another year of, quote, strong financial performance. Interesting what happens when you allow the automakers to make the kind of cars that they want to make and not the cars that you tell them they have to make or the only cars that you're going to allow people to buy, which is what we heard. It's got to be all the EVs. Well, Trump got into office and said no more of that. All of a sudden, GM's like, oh, this is kind of nice. We can make the vehicles that people actually might want to buy. And what do you know? General Motors, again, having a good footing there. And story number three, I had to throw this in because it just made me laugh. The Babylon Bee remains undefeated. And so if you know the Bee, it's a satirical website. And they put really funny headlines and supported by really funny stories. And so I had to put this in, even though it's not really one of the most consequential stories out there, it made me laugh, and we can all use a few laughs these days. The headline of the story is, United States posts Minneapolis on Craigslist, $50 or best offer. The story goes like this. Seemingly at a loss as to how to solve the ongoing problems originating from the North Star State, everyone else in the United States has reached a joint agreement to post Minneapolis on Craigslist for $50 or best offer. The Somali fraud scandal, recent riots, violent anti-ICE clashes, and the overall negative effect of just being the city of Minneapolis combined to impact the American people's decision to put the city up for sale at a significantly reduced price. And they go on to read the fictional listing on Craigslist, motivated to sell ASAP. I just had to laugh. And I laugh so I don't cry because I love Minneapolis. Going to be down there in a couple weeks, and I'll go downtown for supper like I always do. But, oh, man, what's happening in Minneapolis? It's a sad deal out there. All right, well, that'll do it for hour number one here at the Steve Hallstrom Show. We're just getting started. If you have found yourself thinking, you know, I got to bone up a little bit more on this whole story about the universal school lunch, who gets it and who doesn't, as well as some of this polling you're hearing about and this petition movement. We're going to talk about all that. State Representative Greg Steeman joins me next on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Here we go, hour number two, the Steve Hallstrom Show. Good to have you with me, my friend. Thanks for being here. We're going to do the second hour a little differently. Normally, I have a few things along the way we try to do as kind of regular elements of the 10 o'clock hour. But today, we're going to change that up because there is a conversation that has, I don't want to say brewing, it's been brewing, and it continues even after a key concept got shot down in the recent legislative special session, and I think there's some things that we need to think about and talk about and maybe address in a real honest way regarding this particular issue, and that is food for kids in schools and the payment of that or the funding of that by you and me, the taxpayer. So we're going to do that here today in the second hour of the program. Before we get into that conversation, I want to remind you that coming up tomorrow, 8 to 5, there is an auction on the Big Deals page at am1100theflag.com. It's a DreamX bed from Comfort King Mattress. So if you haven't been sleeping great lately, or you realize that you know, every time you get in, you kind of just sink right down to the middle because there's no support, well, it's time to change things up, and you can do that with this Big Deals auction. It's normally about a $4,000 value, this DreamX bed. But you can get it for maybe even a big deal on the Big Deals page there. am1100theflag.com. Click on the Big Deals tab and go and make sure that you get your bid in there for that deal. So that'll be going till 5 o'clock coming up tomorrow on AM1100theflag.com Big Deals page. Greg Steeman is a North Dakota State Representative from the Fargo area, and he's been a good friend of mine for many years. I met Greg doing basketball games back in the sports days when he was doing the same thing, very successful college basketball coach back in the day, and now he's become a key member of the North Dakota legislature. And he and I are very dear friends, and we're going to have a good slug it out, hug it out a little bit here today, as we did over the weekend. But I just want you to know that that Greg and I are really, really good friends, and we're going to have some differences of opinion, but it'll be a good conversation today, and I'm really glad that he was willing to come in and have a chat. How are you, Coach?
I'm doing well, Steve. Thanks a lot for having me in.
Good to have you here. Let's get to it. So I did not know this when I was trying to destroy this idea on my radio show last week, but you were one of the co-sponsors of the bill in the House to do the universal lunch, paying for everybody, regardless of income level, for not just a lunch, but a breakfast as well. Talk about your philosophy on this, because it's a little different than maybe what I would have thought going in.
Well, once again, I appreciate the discussion we had, you know, a few days ago, and then also the opportunity to come out and have the discussion here. Frankly, I've been opposed to the concept my previous three sessions. I've been opposed to free lunches for everybody. First of all, there is no such thing as a free lunch.
Amen.
We know that. But for kids not having to pay, I've always been in favor of, you know, some means testing, for lack of a better term, income levels, saying, hey, do we really have to pay for somebody's children's meals who makes $150,000 a year? But I also, in discussing things with Mike Nathy, who was the primary sponsor on it, and a few of the others that were on it, we looked at, you know, the signatures that are being gathered right now for the initiated measure, that if they get enough signatures, that will put free school lunches for everybody in the state constitution, which then we, as a future legislative bodies, or even our current body that would meet at the beginning of 27, if I'm fortunate enough to get reelected, we would have no choice but to fund it, and we would have to take those dollars from somewhere else in the state budget, or even potentially in the K-12 budget. And I valued that. I said, I don't think we should tie the hands of future legislative bodies and obligate them, because we've talked about this many times, Steve. We are a state that is dependent on volatile commodity prices, both ag and energy. We don't control those. I mean, we love them when the numbers are big because the revenues are good and the economy is strong in our state, but we're very, very dependent on those commodity prices. I think most people are realizing that oil is kind of trending down. It bounced back up above 60 for a while, I think, last week. I'm not sure what it is today.
Yeah, just above it right now.
Just above, which anything above 60 is good, because I think we used 59 and 57 when we forecasted for the next 2 years. But that's still, it's still concerning.
You know, Harold Hamm says 60 isn't good enough.
Well, and I believe
they're shutting down their rigs out in the Bakken, because 60 on paper turns into, what, 48 or something, the real price, because they got to pay to get it to market.
And that's important. I mean, Harold Hamm, I mean, they're not stopping pumping. They're just not drilling new. You know, so the rigs that are pumping are still doing about 1.1 million.
Oh, they're still pumping.
They're just not drilling new.
They're not drilling new. Oh, okay. I thought it was they were just shutting everything down out there.
My understanding is they're not growing.
Anyway,
not, put it that way.
The point is that, we got commodities, and we all know what corn and soybeans look like right now.
Yep. And so that was kind of my thought process on saying, all right, I think it's important that the legislature maintains control. And then the other thought we had is, well, you know, if we can get them to maybe back off on that and allow the legislature to maintain control, that would be good. I think once it gets in the Constitution, like I say, we lose all control. So I valued the long game from that standpoint. And then saying, hey, listen, if we've got numbers that aren't sustainable, and because one of the arguments against it is, well, once you start it, you'll never back it off.
I have said that.
Yep. And I guess I disagree a little bit. I remember 2017. I wasn't in the legislature at the time. I was on the State Board of Higher Education. And Burgum walked in and said, hey, you guys everybody with a 95% budget, or find things to cut. And I also think we can message things more effectively when we have control of them. If we say, hey, listen, we're just going to say people that making this much, $125,000 or more, or less, excuse me, we're going to help pay for the cost of the lunches. And there are other valid arguments against it. You know, we get free and reduced, you know, federal dollars for free and reduced lunch right now. And the state legislature, I supported this. We put in a 225% of poverty level.
Bought it up from 150.
150.
We did. Which the feds give you, and you said, well, we'll put more in it so that we're getting more kids of low-income families or kids at higher-income families. They get all their meals free as well.
Yeah, and the kids that need it the most, we bumped that to 225, which was, I believe, about $75,000 for a family of
four. Something like that.
In that neighborhood, mm-hmm. And I don't want to stretch those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of just thought that through, and I thought there was more value in the legislature maintaining control of the budget than having it mandated by putting it in the Constitution. And then we can evaluate some of the numbers. We can get some data. If we paid for everything for 1 year, we could probably have some really good data. The other thing that has been a concern about when we helped add money and raise that level of people that were eligible for free and reduced, we found out that not everybody accessed it. And you don't know if that's if we're not getting the message out, if we're not getting the word out, if school districts aren't making parents aware. I'm not trying to place blame. I'm just trying to look for why aren't those dollars being utilized at the level that they could be.
Well, this is a key point, because what you're telling me is the kids that have access, they're not even taking it already anyway. So what's the problem?
Well, and that's a fair question. And that's why I would like the legislature to maintain control. If we could have some data, if we could look at it and go, why is this? Why isn't there the level of participation that there should be, mm-hmm. if we're able to provide it with some budgeted money that we have right now, and dig into that and find out. But if this petition gets enough signatures, it goes straight into the Constitution, and there's no negotiating on it. It's the state will provide, you know, two meals a day for every K-12 student.
So my point is this. You have to have principles, standards, whatever you want to call it, hills you'll die on. And one of mine is that the government should only do for people what they cannot do for themselves. And if we're going to use our tax money, and I don't care if you're talking about it's oil money, whatever oil doesn't give, you and I, Greg, and everybody else listening, we have to give to make that. So it is our money. Mm-hmm. The government doesn't have any money. It only has the money that it takes from us. So if you're going to put that money, our tax money, towards something, it has to solve a problem. What problem are we trying to solve here?
And
we've solved the problem already.
Correct. The problem that I was attempting to solve is I don't want the legislature to lose control of budgeting for K-12.
So you're looking at a different problem.
I believe we relinquish control by putting it in the Constitution. The Constitution says the state legislature has no choice but to take taxpayer money and pay for every school child's meals twice a day.
And whether they want them or not.
Whether they want them or not. There's a lot of people. And how do we – that's another thing.
Hold on right there, because we got a break coming up, and I can tell your wheels are turning. And I want to ask, Greg, when we come back on this thing, how many people in North Dakota know – that free lunch is already available for this many kids? There's a big piece of that conversation, too, that we'll have when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Every Tuesday at this time, we get a little smarter thanks to our buddy Chris Buckingham from SolveCXO. They are in the business of aligning systems, people, and processes. And if you're a business owner or work in business administration of any kind, you got to know Chris. He's got a lot of great ideas and great perspective. Chris, good morning to you. So the conversation that I want to have with you today is about technology, how we make it work for the company, but also we don't frustrate everybody on the team to make it happen. But that can happen sometimes when you try to get the right tools in place, but not everybody's on the same page with it. How does that happen, and what's the biggest cause of that?
Yeah, good morning, Steve. Many times these tools weren't chosen with people and processes in mind. You know, IT systems don't match how the teams actually work, and the people create workarounds just to get through the day because, you know, it was never built to do it the way they need it to.
So the new tech that seems so good, when you take it out of the box, it can actually slow things down then.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if it's not focused on really the business goals first, things are misaligned. It adds more steps. It creates confusion and ultimately friction, and people get frustrated.
So if a company is looking at putting in some new tech or upgrading what they have already, what does it mean to when you say we have to align that with what the business wants to do? What do you mean by that?
It really means that we want the technology to support how people do their jobs and how the business operates within the scope of what the technology is supposed to provide. We don't want to force a business to adapt to new technology tools if they don't need to.
And the group of people that Chris puts together to do that is called the Solve Tech Advisors, and that program helps with that, Chris?
Yeah, exactly. The goal of that program is to make sure we align the systems, the people, and the processes so that technology becomes a support system for efficient and effective business and not a barrier anymore.
Not a barrier. That's the big thing you got to avoid. Good stuff. Chris is a vision to action leader at Solve CXO. They help business owners turn their vision into action. Find out more about them online at solvecxo.com. SolveCXO.com. Chris, thanks for the time today. Have a great day.
Yep, thanks a lot, Steve. Enjoy the sunshine.
Yeah, thanks. We will. Feels pretty good, even though the air is a little cold. Thanks so much, Chris. Continuing our conversation with State Representative Greg Steeman here. After the state legislature in the Senate, State House passed it, State Senate did not, in a close vote, voted down universal school lunch. And now what is left of this, the idea is not dead because there's a group that is putting together an effort to put this on the ballot in November as a constitutional measure. So they're going through the process with Secretary of State to get signatures. And if they get enough, which they will in this case, there's enough people that will sign on this one, it will go on the ballot and the taxpayers of North Dakota will vote on this. So, Greg, here's my question. There is, I'm told by smart people like yourself and others, that there's polling out there that shows that it's a done deal that this thing is going to go through. It's overwhelming that people want it. Like even 2/3 of Republicans, I think I saw, want this. Here's my question, though. How many people do we think really know that there is already a mechanism in place for a low-income kid up to, like you said, right now it's $75,000 for a family of four? I'll turn that question into a statement. I just don't think most people know that. I think, and I didn't when this whole thing came up. I'm like, oh, yeah, we got to take care. But we already have a program in place to do this. That's why I say I don't know what we're trying to solve, because I think what people want to have is that if a kid's poor, doesn't have the food, doesn't have the money, that they're still taken care of. And I feel like that's happening already. So do you think most people in North Dakota really know this?
I don't know that they do, Steve. I don't know that the messaging has been as effective as it can be. And I think, you know, even when we – another bill was offered in special session that said, hey, let's go to 300% of poverty level. And I want a conversation to also talk about messaging, because there's some key aspects of messaging that I think automatically will make people inclined to say, well, of course we should do it. First of all, like 300% of poverty level would have bumped that number to about $96,000 for a family of four, which I think is probably right around the median income in the state of North Dakota. And when people hear that number, I mean, they go, oh, okay. I mean, that's a fair living, you know. That's the, and but at the same time, we also know that costs continue to go up, and people look at it, go, if I have an extra $1,600 in my pocket, if I'm not having to pay for the two kids, well, that's kind of nice to spend on something else. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying it's the messaging. The other thing that, you know, when we talk about not funding at all at all levels, people aren't hearing us very effectively at, well, what level would you fund it at? You know, would it be $125,000? The concern with that is once you put $125,000 into code, you got to probably change it every 2 years, right? Based on consumer production index, whatever it is. Anyway, there are some intricacies to it, but it's not impossible. The other message that is out there, Steve, and you and I have talked about this, and we talked off air, many people in the state think we're hoarding money. When they hear about the legacy funds,
you setting, and me or who? Because I'm not hoarding. Oh, the state.
The state. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Fair question. I got to see. It's my
I'm
messaging.
Having fun with you.
I got to be better at messaging.
You're fine.
We're sitting on a $13.5 billion legacy fund.
Amazing.
That is earning interest. And so there's the legacy fund, and then there are legacy fund earnings. And then we are also automatically constitutionally bound to continue to see, I think it's at least $200 million a year, goes back into the principal. We want to see that fund grow.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of people who go, well, you've got plenty of money. You can pay for these things. I just don't ever want to see that principal get touched. I want to see that fund grow and grow and grow so that, you know, in 20 years it's at $40 billion because the revenue, it's a revenue-generating asset.
Yeah.
And our state would benefit greatly if that continues to grow, because right now the property tax, the $1,600, that came from legacy fund earnings. So the dollars being made off the legacy fund, we're using them for certain things. And I'm not trying to get away from school lunch here. I'm talking about our messaging. People will just look at that and go, well, you've got plenty of money to do plenty of things. And the legacy fund, I just want people to know there's a difference between the legacy fund and the earnings that it creates.
You guys need a PR firm. You have all these you have 100 people or whatever it is, 150 altogether, and yet it seems like the key message is, like, everybody's kind of left to their own, but, you know, some citizen legislator from middle of wherever, they don't think to put out a press release or whatever. I wish that the legislature had a better way to do that.
I think that's a very fair statement, Steve. And I'm not trying to be critical, but we are 141 unique citizens, and our leadership is good. But it's something, our messaging isn't as effective as it can be.
Dana wants to jump into this conversation. He joins us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hi, Dana.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. A couple questions. How much would you need to get into the legacy fund to accomplish your goal of running the whole budget off the interest? And off this school lunch program, how much is it going to cost for the staff to implement and run it, plus to cover the food costs and the garbage increase?
Got it. Dana, thanks for that. I'm going to let you go because we got a break coming up, but on the other side, we'll take those questions when we return on the Steve Hallstrom Show. 701-271-1100. If you have a question, let us hear from you. Be back right after this. It is time to get another qualifier in the process here for our Valentine's Day trip of a lifetime, brought to you by All Sauger Meats, Kingpins, and Frontier Airlines. And today, our lucky person is Curtis Brendemuhl of Moorhead. So, Curtis, you have 11 minutes to give us a call at 701-271-1100 and claim your spot at the final drawing party. I keep saying February 3rd like it's next summer sometime. It's actually a week from today. A week from tonight, or we'll be over at Kingpins giving away this amazing trip. Two tickets to Vegas, two tickets to Wizard of Oz at the Sphere on Valentine's Day. We'll give you three nights hotel at a nice hotel on the Strip and $500 spending money. How's that for a prize? Doggone it. I mean, what more do you want? You want us to come over and pack your suitcase for you too? You can register if you've not already by going to am1100theflag.com and registering there. So Curtis Brendemuhl, you have until about 10:44 to get the job done. Continue our conversation with State Representative Greg Steeman. Before the break, Dana asked us, how much would we have to get in principal in the legacy fund so we could basically pay for the whole budget with the interest, which is a really good question. I hadn't thought of that before. Well, we did a little homework. Greg, of course, being a banker, figured this out in like 10 seconds. I was like, okay, let me run it through Gemini. And we came up with $38.75 billion. And we're at, what, 13 and 13 something and right now? 13 yeah, and a half right now. And that thing's grown like a weed.
It is.
I mean, a year ago, it might have been at like, what, 10 or 11, something like that?
I was going to say, I think a year ago, we're talking about $12
billion. Okay.
So it's continued to grow. I mean, investment people have done a great job. And and so, yeah, that $40 billion number is kind of, that's always been my thought. You know, I know it's not going to get there in my lifetime, but it might not be too far away. And that would fund our general fund annual general fund spending. Obviously, all the budgeting we do right now is for a two-year biennium, and so you always have to go, all right, what is it annually? And I think it's a worthy goal. I don't want to see – and our Common Schools Trust Fund, that's bumping up around $8 billion right now. And so that's become kind of a second legacy fund, and that generates a ton of revenue that goes straight to K-12 education budget.
Mm.
And then the I think his second question was, how much do we know how much, you know, we had put $65 million in for a one-year thing, and so you don't know for sure until you actually implement it if we are forced to fund this. But it'll probably be, you got to start thinking it's going to be $140 million per biennium if you know, in that general ballpark, if we're obligated to cover all those costs.
All right, so let me kind of change the angle on this conversation a little bit. I know where you're standing on this, and I you make sense to me, you do. But at what point do we say, instead of just resigning ourselves, well, it's going to go through sometime anyway, you know, throw up your hands, we can't do anything about it. Why don't we fight for what we think is right and pray hard and trust the good Lord and the common sense of North Dakota that between now and November, we can talk to enough people or give it a shot to talk to enough people and say, look, we're doing this already, you guys. The thing that you want solved has been solved already. We're doing it. Why don't we just fight for what we think is right and make our votes on that rather than, well, this might happen, that might happen, and stand on something today?
It's a fair question, and I've done that the last three sessions.
Yes, you have.
I've said,
let the record show.
We don't, and that message is not being heard based on polling. I'm not trying to cave to that, but I'm trying to acknowledge it. I'm trying to go, this isn't, you know, they went out of their way to say, hey, we want to pull as many Republicans as possible. Now, granted, we all know there's a lot of Republicans or conservative people in North Dakota.
Yeah, but it's 2/3, 1/3 or so.
They went out of their way to say, let's make sure we're not, you know, missing, you know, having an error on this. And it was, I believe it was 63% of Republicans said, yeah, why not pay for them? Now, a lot of it, Steve, comes down to how is the question asked?
Yeah, true.
And is it, do you think it's right that we should feed kids?
Do you want kids starving and tipping over in school?
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm not saying, I don't know what the questions were. Yeah. Honestly, I was not one that got polled. But it's four or five of them out there where it's anywhere from 60 to 80%, depending on who gets polled, depending on what questions are asked.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that that's going to translate into 60% to 80% at the polls. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm not going to ignore it.
Well, you're making my point for me, though.
Yeah.
Because we don't know the polling. Yes, we've got these numbers, but maybe the polls were screwed up. Maybe they asked it in a leading way. We don't know. Maybe people don't know. That's why I'm kind of saying maybe we just vote for what we think is the right answer on this and just trust that whatever. And if it doesn't happen, whatever. But I think I hear you saying the polls seem so convincing, it doesn't seem like we can win. Is that what – am I putting words in your mouth?
No. People like to talk in absolutes. You know, going back to, you know, previous careers, I like to look at where are the odds most in our favor or what do we have most control over? I don't have control over what people are going to say at the ballot box. What I do have control over is if the results echo what the polls are showing, I know one thing that's absolute. It's going to be in the Constitution forever. It's never coming back out. We lose control forever. My thought was, I'm going to support this legislation because it literally mimics exactly what is going to go on the ballot measure. And if we pass it and they decide, hey, we got what we wanted, we're not going to run this, we're not going to put it in the Constitution, at the very least, the state legislature retains control. That's the only thing that I thought we give ourselves a chance to do. And like I say, and if it runs, if they get the signatures, which you and I both think they will, and it passes, well, it's absolute. We lose control forever, and those costs are going to be paid forever, and we got to find a way to have the dollars to do that.
I get it. You're trying to look at it practically, and I get that.
Yep.
I don't know, Greg. I guess I said what I said before. I feel like there's a lot of things that seemed certain to me at one time in my life, and it was amazing what happened over the 10 months. Go back to Trump the first time, second time. I thought he had no shot. Right away, I said, get this clown out of here. In the first debate, I'm like, but turns out he's been the best president we've ever had twice. I was wrong. And in the time that we had from Trump getting in the second time around, I'm like, oh, please, Mr. President. But I was wrong on that, too. And things changed. Joe Biden fell apart. Mm-hmm. Kamala Harris got inserted into the mix, and she was worse. Praise God. All of those things happened. But there's a lot that can change, and I think if somebody did an effort to like talk about what this means. I don't know who would get behind it and who would underwrite it or whatever, but the state needs a good PR effort talking about we've solved this problem already. So let me ask you a kind of a follow-up question to that, and that is, can we get somebody to put a petition measure together that says we're going to go whatever to $100,000 and, like you said, make it really simple for people to understand, and they have one like for everybody or just for $100,000? I think we would win on that.
I don't know that you're
wrong.
Can
we do that? You're not in charge of making petitions, but would that not work?
I wouldn't be surprised if it would be very effective. Typically, that's going to probably take $1.5 million. I'm no expert, but when you talk to people that have put these types of campaigns together, it requires quite an investment.
It does.
And, you know, if there's someone that wants to say, hey, we're going to do a campaign and we're going to push that, you know, we don't want the state to pay for everybody's meals, but we think anybody making $125,000 or less will pay for all their kids' meals. If that was the messaging, I have a feeling it would probably make it a much more close vote, even though, you know, based on what the polls say, based on what the polls currently say.
Yeah.
That's the problem. It requires an organized effort and excellent communication.
Okay, facts. Speaking of organized effort, the people that are for this petition now, I look, they've got a really nice website. They have a PR company who is emailing me to say, hey, have us on your show. These things don't happen if Steve and Greg get together and say, hey, let's put something on the ballot. We get a new park in Carrington, North Dakota. This is organized money. Who's behind this and why?
I honestly do not know, and I mean that. I have not done my research. I mean, I know North Dakota United is involved in it. And I know there's a number of organizations in the state. I don't know specifically. North Dakota United actually did come up and speak in favor of our bill in committee hearing, saying we support this. But no one would commit to saying if it passes that they would stop the petition campaign. And so, and I understand that. But they said we support this legislation.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling, had we passed it, it probably would have taken the wind out of the sails of this organization. I think a lot of people would have said, well, didn't we just pass this?
Yeah.
And that was my thought process in order to retain a certain level of control within the legislative body.
Yeah. Rumor is that this is out-of-state money that's come in for this effort. Do you know anything about that?
Have I heard that? Yes. I speak to the validity of it? I cannot. I'm not saying that myself.
Yeah. So this just gives me the heebie-jeebies. Why is out-of-state money coming in on this effort?
Who's behind it?
What's the end game? Like, who benefits from this monetarily? Because money is typically only going to flow toward things that money gets served from. So it makes me really nervous. Okay, we got a full phone lines here, so let's hit this. Tom is first up. Tom, what's your question on this one? Welcome to the show.
Thanks for taking my call. I disagree that it's a good idea with the legislature's mindset is that we have to pass pretty much the exact same thing so that there's not an initiated measure. If there's something down the road that the people who would put the initiated measure together would not like, and what the legislature would do to try to manipulate their own bill, they could just do another initiated measure to counter that. And it's never a good idea to legislate by fear. A good example is several sessions ago, there was a bill that came out of the legislature by Representative Doctor to legalize marijuana. The polls showed that just slightly people were beginning to think it'd be a good idea to have marijuana legislated. What happened is it was defeated, and then the initiated measure was also defeated, and then it was defeated again. So it's never a good idea to legislate out of fear, I don't believe.
Tom, thanks for that. I'm sorry. We're so tight on time, we're going to let you go. You made a good point. Greg, what do you want to say about what Tom had to say there?
You know, it's not out of fear. It's out of trying to be practical and trying to read the room. And this obviously is gaining legs, and we can either do it under our terms or under somebody else's terms. And that was my thought process.
All right, Andy and Jim, hang on. We're going to get to your calls on the other side of the break. Bob, hang on. We'll get to you as well. But we do one open phone line now at 701-271-1100. I've got about 15 text messages, too. We'll try to get to all those as we come back. To finish up with Representative Steeman here on this issue on the Steve Hallstrom Show, don't go away. At Capstone Classical Academy, we believe cultural renewal begins with education, forming wise and virtuous young men and women who love what's true, good, and beautiful, and you can support the effort. Go online right now to givingheartsday.org and search Capstone to make your tax-deductible gift for Giving Hearts Day. Capstone, rigorous academic studies with a Christian worldview. A few more minutes with State Representative Greg Steeman here before we get to Jim's call. Greg, my wish on this thing is that you all would have taken up a Representative Dressler's bill, the 300% bill, that would have got us so we would have been able to say, if you're $100,000 and under, everything's free for you. Over that, sorry, you got to send your kid to lunch with a peanut butter sandwich or go to school with a peanut butter sandwich. And to your point, the Measure people would have still done their thing, but I could have spent 4 months ripping that theory, saying, why are you just now fighting for the rich people on this thing when we've already solved the problem? That's what I wish would have happened. I don't know. That's not a question, but what do you think about that?
No, I'm not even going to disagree with you because, like I said, we all want to think there are absolutes out there. I try to make the most pragmatic decision possible, gather as much facts, gather as many facts as I can, and gather as much information as I can, and then make a decision based on that. And is it always right or always 100% right? Not necessarily, but at least I can say I've thought this through. At least I think I can say I've sought advice, I've sought insight, and made the best decision I can based on the information I've gathered.
Well, if this goes through, everybody remember Greg Steeman is sitting here telling you that if we got to someday cut the per pupil funding because we got to pay for lunches for some guy who's making 250 grand a year, remember this conversation.
And that's just that was kind of that's
honest.
My rationale.
Honest. All right. Jim and Steve, you guys get the last word here. Jim has been waiting the longest on this one. He joins us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hi, Jim.
Hi. So my thing is this. I mean, I don't think there should be breakfast included in this. Kids don't need breakfast. The myth that the most important meal of the day. Actual research shows that most of these breakfasts are high in carbohydrates, makes their blood sugar spike, makes them sleepy in the morning, and they start to get really hungry by 10 o'clock. They should have a protein shake in the morning or, you know, more protein at lunch, and they're more apt to eat all of their noon meal instead of just picking at it and throwing half in the garbage can. Secondly, when I hear this thing, people say, oh, this is socialism. Well, how do we grow to a $20 billion budget in the state of North Dakota? Where'd all that money go to? There's a lot of money going out to the special interests in this state that the legislature approves. And I think asking for one meal out of this whole deal back to the taxpayers, which is basically a taxpayer break for people, for families, that they don't have to have that expense anymore, is not asking too much. When you consider all the money that's being given away to out-of-state corporations coming here, all in the name of economic development.
Jim, good stuff. We'll let you go. Jim has apparently seen me go through the drive-thru at Sandy's Donuts one too many times talking about the empty carbs for breakfast. Guilty of that one. Your thoughts on what Jim had to say?
I'm not arguing anything. It's, you know, the Measure has both meals, and so like I said, that's why we put the legislation together to mimic what that was. And I'm not disagreeing with a lot of what he's saying, to be honest with you.
You told me earlier $3 billion a year is what we've got to basically come up with in North Dakota to pay our obligations here. But you said like $20 billion overall. Am I hearing you right? We get like $17 billion from the feds?
Not all from the feds. There's some special funds. There's some self-funded agencies, things along those lines where we will use those revenues to fund certain things. But there's a lot of matching federal dollars. I mean, when you look at Medicaid expansion, for every $1 spent, $9 is matched by the federal government. Hmm. When you look at DOT projects, there's a lot of federal dollars that come into the state. Those federal dollars aren't coming from, well, all taxpayer dollars come from taxpayers, right? But the federal dollars are not necessarily coming specifically from North Dakota taxpayers.
From you and me sitting here, right. Yeah. Interesting. I did not know that it was that much of our basically our expenses that come from those sources.
A lot of matching funds.
All right, Steve, next up on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks. Hey, I was thinking, I looked it up, and there's 20% of the population in North Dakota are K-12 students. So instead of doing a favor for 20%, why don't we work more hard at getting rid of property taxes, and you'd benefit more people, and all those people that have a house and kids, they'd afford be able to afford to pay for their own kids' lunches and breakfasts.
Hmm. Interesting thought. Steve, thanks for giving a call. Greg, what do you think about that?
There's an ongoing effort to increase the property tax relief. I mean,
that's true. I mean, you can't argue that.
And that's something that Governor Armstrong, as long as he's in his seat, he'll continue to push that. And I'm not disagreeing with these callers. That has wheels on it. That has a high level of interest in it. I will say that for whatever reason, unless it's manufactured, and I don't know that it is, this free school lunch thing has gotten more and more popular and gotten more and more support, as best I can tell.
About 30 seconds left. Last word on this?
No, I appreciate the opportunity. I love the calls. I'm certainly not right with every decision I make, but I just want your listeners to know that I try to think things through as much as I possibly can. I take this role incredibly seriously. It's the greatest honor of my professional life. And sometimes these discussions are just incredibly valuable.
And complicated.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
And if you want to throw haymakers at Greg, just remember he voted no on this thing three other times before he got to where he's at now. Brother, I appreciate this. Thanks for being here. And I love going toe-to-toe with smart people that I care very much about, because you make me better. And I appreciate you helping me think this through a lot here over the last week or so as well.
Thank you too, Steve. Iron sharpens iron.
There you go.
I love it.
All right. Have a great day, my friend, and keep on flying that flag. Scotty and the What's on Your Mind show coming up next.